Thanks for listening to the Star Sport Podcast, number one for sport in West Cork.
Close your eyes and pull like a dog.
And a new Irish record for Phil Healy, 22.99.
Christy Cooney hands over the Sam Maguire Cup to Graham Canty, Cork All-Ireland champions for the seventh time ever.
Hello and welcome to the Star Sport Podcast. My name is Jack McCarron of the Southern Star and I'm joined, as always, by Star Sport editor Kieran McCarty. With the Christmas season upon us and most of the shopping still not started, we've decided to dedicate today's show to discussing which sports book you should be buying for the sports fan in your life. To help us do it, we've been joined in the studio by Ger McCarty of the Southern Star, the Irish Examiner and the Echo. Ger is also a published author himself, so he should be well placed to cast judgment on the books we're reviewing today. Later in the show, we're going to chat to Adrian Russell of the 42.ie, whose book The Double has been garnering rave reviews. But before we look at the best of this year's book, lads, I want to get a sense of your favourite sports book that you've ever read, not just this year. I know that's a fairly open question and there's thousands of sports books to choose from, but is there one that stands out for you as kind of a seminal book in your sports writing or sports reading life? Ger, we'll come to you first.
Yeah, it's actually an easy one for me because I remember distinctly reading it and it was Rough Ride by Paul Kimmage. I didn't know an awful lot about what was going on behind the scenes in cycling. Stephen Roach was a hero of mine as a kid and Sean Kelly. And I knew of Kimmage and I'd read one or two things, but I picked up Rough Ride and I read it from cover to cover. And I was just blown away by the honesty and the brutality and just the sheer doggedness and, you know, fearlessness of his writing. And it actually inspired me just to keep writing myself from that end. And it was just an absolutely brilliant read. I mean, you don't really have to know. The best books are the ones that aren't necessarily about the sport itself, but the characters behind it. And it just lifted the lid on so much and opened my eyes to what I didn't know about sport and the realities of it. And it was definitely a big moment, if you want to call it a big moment, in reading. I've read, like yourselves, I've read far too many sports books, but that one I've always gone back to. That's really that for me, that was huge.
Yeah, that was a game changer. Kieran, what about yourself? Any stand out at the front of your mind?
Call it coincidence or not, but it's also a cycling book. It's called The Secret Race. It was by Tyler Hamilton years ago, I think it's 6, 7, 8 years ago now, and it was Daniel Coyle who wrote it, and it's a brilliant book as well. Tyler Hamilton was a cyclist with Lance Armstrong, and he actually, to borrow what Ger said there, kind of he lifted the lid and kind of told what really went on in the team that time. Superb read. It was so revealing. I think it won the William Hill Sports Book of the Year, or was at least nominated for it, but it was another brilliant read. And it just goes to show, we both picked cycling books,
yeah.
You know, kind of what are the odds of that? Because when you think kind of the GAA soccer, yeah, rugby, exactly, and all that kind of, but it's books like that where you're learning all the time, kind of, like in that book, Tyler Hamilton, like when he revealed, I suppose, what actually went on, really, kind of, with the samples and all the doping in the sport and stuff. And he gave you a look into life as a professional cyclist back then. Like, it was a brilliant read, and it's just one I couldn't put down.
Well, there's two books to put on your shopping list. You can probably get them on Amazon for €5 or something to that effect. At this stage, that's what happens to books eventually. But anyway,
what about you, Jack?
Yeah,
Jack. The kind of book that really got me interested in, as listeners will know, I'm a big boxing fan. I try to squeeze some boxing onto the show every week. So the kind of first boxing book that really got me hooked on the sport from a fan's perspective was Dark Trade, yes, by Donald McRae, who was Sports Book of the Year, I think, in 1994.
Absolutely brilliant book.
And that's still cracking read, yeah. And it's not just, as you're saying with the two books, it's not like fight reports. He really deep dives into the world of boxing, the chicanery, the gangsters involved, some of the characters. James Toney in particular stood out as like one of the biggest characters in boxing. So yeah, we'll probably talk about Donald McRae's newest book a little later on. But Dark Trade, another one to add to the list. I think there was a reprint, maybe even done this year or last year. So another classic worth reading. But let's chat about this year's books. And I think it would be rude not to start
contractually
with,
I know,
Something in the Water, How Skibbereen Rowing Conquered the World. I hope I have the title right there. Yeah. Author, Kieran McCarty, publisher, Mercier Press. So, Ger, you done the reviews for the Southern Star for the books this week. I assume you've read at least some of Something in the Water.
I'm nearly finished it. And like people will say, you're putting it number one because, you know, he's the editor and you write for the Star. I'll be very honest. I wasn't sure about it before I started. I knew Kieran was writing it. I knew he was dealing with a huge amount of raw material, you know. And the thing with raw material is if you don't get to the nub and the hub and the heart and the soul, of the story, you just end up recounting a lot of what people already know. So the beauty of Something in the Water is, as I've said in my review, I said it's by far and away the best book I've read this year, sports book, far and away. And the reason it is it starts with the O'Donovan brothers, as it should, I think, because everybody is interested in that story still and they want to know a little bit more about it. And the thing I love about the O'Donovans actually that you mentioned in the book is after all they go through, after all the attention, winning the silver medals, they're back in the Olympic Village and they're pissed off because they never won gold. And that's the mark of the O'Donovans, that for all the, everything that happened afterwards and as brilliant as it was, they're proper athletes. And then what I love most about it, I was kind of saying, okay, where do we go from here now? And what Kieran brilliantly did was he started with Dominic Casey, which is the best person to start with, because in the centre of all of this, whether Dominic likes it or not, and I know he doesn't, he is the soul of that club. And then you hear about the founding, the three men that founded the club, how all that happened. You see what the other rowers went through just to even get to a European Championship, just even to get to a World Championship. And you actually have to stop and stand back and go, right, I know some of the people you're talking about here as I'm reading it. I know the places you're talking about. And you have to kind of just unplug yourself for a second and go, Jesus, it's Skibbereen. And this is the world stage. This is the Olympic stage. But I'll be honest, I think Kieran, and I said it, I think I said it, this, I don't know who I said it to him, if I didn't already write about it, and I think I wrote a review in the Echo. He was the perfect person to write it because he's not from here, but he's in here and he's immersed here. And you have a fresh pair of eyes and you have a fresh view on everything that was going on. And I think Malachy Clerkin in the Irish Times has praised it as the best written sports book, which is one of the highest praises you can get from the best sports writer, one of the best sports writers in the country. And what I've said in the review, and I mean it, I mean, if I never wrote for the Southern Star, I would mean it. I know nothing about rowing. I know the O'Donovans. I have an idea what happens at galas. But this isn't about rowing. It's about the people and what the people of Skibbereen have done to get where they are. And it is from start to finish, and I'm nearly at the finish finally. It is, because I'm reading three books in a minute, but this is by far and away the most entertaining one. It's brilliant. And it's the one, if you're thinking, what do I get for Christmas for so-and-so, because he or she is not into sports. Well, this isn't, it's a sports book, but it's not necessarily about sports, as we've already said, the common thread of the books that we like, and you'll love it. And if you're from West Cork, or you're used to live in West Cork, or you're living away from West Cork, definitely you'll really love it, because you'll know the places that he's described and the people that he's talking about. And as I said, it would have been very easy to do the O'Donovan Brothers Chronicles. Thankfully, you didn't. Mm-hmm. You gave them their due. You put them in the right position, as they would appreciate. And you gave a little bit more, the things that I didn't know. And for that, I think it's fantastic.
But it is interesting what you're saying about the book then. Like, it is based around the O'Donovans to a certain degree at the start and around the sport of rowing. But as you mentioned with Rough Ride by Paul Kimmage, mm-hmm. the Tyler Hamilton book, and Dark Trail by Don McRae that we spoke about earlier, they are books based in a certain sport, but they're not about the sport. They're mm-hmm. about much more than that. And I think Kieran's done that really well, as Jura said. So Kieran, I don't expect you to praise your own book. You've done that enough in the office for the last 6 months or so. But just tell us about the process of writing it. Like, because as Jura mentioned, the amount of raw material you have there, you have reports in the Star archive mm-hmm. going back 50, 60 odd years. I don't know how long. How old is the club?
It's 49 years.
49 years. So yeah. 50 odd years worth of archive. Interviews with dozens and dozens of people, former members, just local people who have followed their story. Just maybe bring us back to the start, and when you were planning on writing this book, how big a task did it seem at the start?
It's probably the biggest jigsaw I've ever put together, because like I said, the club is 49 years old, but their history, the club doesn't have its own history book, and so you're trying to collate all this information. So obviously the Southern Star archives here were a huge help. But then you were basically relying on the goodwill and openness of the people of the club to allow me into their lives to tell their story. And from day one, the club was so obliging. They were so on board with the idea. Even I remember one night meeting Danny Murphy and Richard Hosford, two of the three founding members. We met up one night in the club in the clubhouse and a couple of hours there, and it just took off from there. So it was a lot of interviews. just putting the different pieces of the jigsaw together and then trying to work out, okay, what goes where, trying to fill in the gaps and so on, because you're covering from 1970 up to 1970 up to 2019. So it's a long time to spend, and you don't want to miss any of the central characters, and you want to get as many people as you can. So it was challenging. I'll be honest, there was a couple of moments where absolutely pig sick of it. Kind of, you hear people say, like, you know, Jerry, you've written a book, that you're going to hit a wall as such, and you're sitting there on your own in a room with your laptop. You're thinking, where the hell do I go now with it? Kind of, it's just not working. This is the biggest load of nonsense. You know, it just doesn't make sense to you at that moment. But the funny thing is, at our launch a couple of weeks ago, delighted that Lord David Putnam was there to launch the book, and he was asking me kind of just about the process and so on. And he said, did you reach that moment where you hated it and it wasn't going to work out? And he goes, and I said, I did. And he goes, well, then you were really writing a book. He goes, I think everybody hits that wall, you could say. But I think the highlight for me, and it's such a small little, two highlights. The first highlight was emails that Dominic Casey sent to his rowers. Dominic is a huge man for detail, but anyone who knows Dominic knows he's very secretive. And I'd asked Dominic about how he used to communicate with the athletes. And I said, I heard email is one of your methods. And no, there's nothing to that. And I was hearing all these different stories, and Dominic being Dominic wasn't too open with that information. But then thankfully I know a good few people in the club, and a few of them helped out by sending me on some of the emails that Dominic sent to them. And all of a sudden I was in his world, and I saw how he worked and how he operated.
And just, did you get these emails without his permission?
Yes.
And just, you know, just GDPR 2019, you know, you've got to be careful about that.
It was actually well before 2019, so we're kind of, we're talking 2018 here, so we're well sorted. So so once I got these emails, and it was especially what I found so fascinating is, I'm going to go back to the summer of 2016, when Dominic was over in Banyoles in northern Spain with Gary and Paul. They were preparing for the Olympics, and the Irish Rowing Championships were going on that July back in Cork, back here in Escara. And for the first time since 1980, Dominic actually missed the Irish Rowing Championships. But he was keeping in touch with everyone in the club by his emails. He sent emails that night kind of saying, well done, keep up the good work. That Sunday, Skibbereen, I think they won 13 national titles that weekend, and Skibbereen became the number one most successful rowing club in the country. That was the weekend, and Dominic wasn't there for it. But the next morning, I think it was on 11:30, he just sent everyone a quick email, congratulations on all the success, and fantastic job, so proud of all of you, etc., etc. I think it was 37 or 41 minutes later, he sent an email to all the male members of the club. The subject head was like 2017. He saw an opening in the international calendar that Skibbereen could put a men's eight on the water at the 2017 National Championships, and he sent out an email to all the male members in the club who were eligible for that boat. They say, if you work hard enough, if you commit, if you give me everything, we can put a boat on the water and we can win the eight. So this was still while the club was basking in the glory of becoming the number one club in the country, and it was before the Olympics and Gary and Paul were training. But the man was actually planning ahead for 2017. So it's just a small insight into how he works. So he was a central character to this. And it was a tough slog, but we got there in the end and delighted with the final product. So
I'm always interested when books are written about various different people. So you mentioned Dominic there and the O'Donovans. I always think when I'm reading a book, we'll say a biography that's written by someone else and not the person in question, how they actually react when the book is published. So have you had much feedback from members of the Skibbereen Rowing Club who are central characters in the book, and has it been well received? I assume it has been, like, I'm not going to, but how have they responded to the book since it's been published?
I'm not just saying it, but it's been all positive. I haven't got one negative comment yet. Maybe that's going to come, you know, you never know.
I haven't finished yet, so
that's one negative comment that's on the way. But a couple of the club members, they said they just couldn't put the book down. Orla Hayes read it over 2 days. Emily Delory, the PRO, did the same. Ross O'Donovan, who was one of the he's a great character who I met through the book. He sent me an email just, I think he got the book on a Friday. He'd finished it the weekend, and he sent me an email on the Monday, and he loved it. And he said, And one of the best comments I got, my wife said you got me just right. Like, and when you're thinking that I'd only met Ross through the kind of process of writing the book, I spent an evening with him up in UCC and he gave me a tour of UCC and so on. And for his wife then to kind of come and say, you nailed him, you got him perfect, you know, kind of that to me is a success, because it is difficult when you're, there's so many different, I suppose, people involved and you're trying to, you're trying to show them in an honest and truthful light. And so to get the feedback like I have has been, it's been brilliant, you know, and it's made it all worthwhile. Like I said, it puts all the hard moments in the background. That's all in the past now. And it's just, the book is there to be enjoyed now.
Okay, then we'll move on from your book just for a couple of minutes. We'll look at some of the other ones. But before we do, Kieran, there is a special event happening this weekend in Bandon, I believe, in relation to your book and another of the ones we're going to speak about a little later. So do you want to just give yourself a little plug there?
In Bandon Book Plus, this Saturday between 2 and 5, that's the bookshop in the Riverview shopping centre there in Bandon. Adrian Russell, author of The Double, and myself will be signing books between 2 and 5. So like Jack said earlier, and I think Jura said as well, it's an ideal Christmas present. So if you want to pop in between 2 and 5, the Bandon Book Plus this Saturday, Adrian Russell with The Double and myself with Something in the Water, we'll both be there signing books. So the more the merrier.
So ladies, form an orderly queue. We'll just, as I said, we'll move on then. And I suppose the biggest sports book released in Ireland this year in terms of coverage it got, it was Richie Sadler's book, Recovering. He obviously went on the Late Late Show. So it's been talked about in depth everywhere in the country already. But that doesn't mean we're not going to take a look at it, because I know, Ger, you really enjoyed this book. He wrote it along with Dion Fanning. So just your overall thoughts on the book?
Again, I'm about three quarters of the way through it, to be honest with you, because I just haven't had time to get to go from start to finish with it. But look, I'm a fan of Richie's for many, many years. Richie was kind enough to put his name to my own book nearly a decade ago, and he didn't even know me. He was kind enough to put even back then, you could just tell from brief conversations that I had with him just what a nice guy he was. The thing I wrote, and the fact that Dion Fanning ghosted or helped him with it. Dion is somebody like we've all read down through the years, just in Sunday Independent. I know he's moved online, but has always been just brilliant with words, brilliant, able to tell a tale and bring it all together. This, the more I read of it, isn't really a sports book, and I've said that in the review for this week's Star. It's probably the best Irish book out there, because Richie could have done what all footballers do and talked about his career and his punditry and given a few stories, which he does. But it's, you know, there's so much depth to what it, you can see he's a very deep thinker and talker from interviews with him anyway. But this could have very easily spiraled into all the things that went wrong in his life. And there was a lot of things that happened to him and horrible things that happened to him, and he's still recovering from them. But to become a psychotherapist and the way he went about doing that is just so different for us to hear, you know, normally from a footballer, you know, it's not usually the career path that they take. And for him to do it, and for him, I think for him to be so open about it, like the most honest book I ever read was Paul McGrath's.
A brilliant book.
A very, very hard to read, though.
The toughest book I've ever read.
Yeah, exactly. And everyone that reads it says the same. You love Paul McGrath and you want the best for him, but when you're reading about what he put himself through, it just, there's times you have to put the book down. And I found myself doing that as well, even in the early stages with Richie, because I knew what was coming. But it's the beauty of it is the way Dion Fanning has helped him write it, because it's not sensationalist. It's you can hear Richie talking as he's doing it, as you're reading through it, and it's just really, really good book. Again, it's in the sports section. It's one of a lot of sports books. It is about sport, because sport is central to his life and his theme, but it doesn't define him. And what that means in English is it's everything else that happened to him as a human being, which is far more interesting than his football career or his punditry career, which I still want to hear about, because that's how you relate to him. But I think since he did the interview on The Late Late Show, and there were reviews of the book, you know, you hear the book getting all these awards and things, you go, okay, look, it's obviously good, but is it going to be as good as they say it is?
Yeah.
It is.
Because he's analysing himself in the book. Like, you know, like you said there, he's a kind of a psychotherapist and stuff, but he's actually going through his own life. Like, every page is analysing himself for what he's done, the decisions he's made and stuff. And there's a reason it won Irish Sports Book of the Year. Like, it's a fantastic read. And he could have concentrated just on, like you said there, just the sports side of it. You know, his soccer career.
Millwall alone would have been a book,
because if you think about it, how hard, I suppose, is it to reveal yourself, you know? And if he said that before, kind of, I think that he was approached a couple of years ago to write a book and he turned it down. But when this opportunity came up, he took a bit of time, and the time felt right for him to write this book now, because he reveals so much about himself, his own flaws, and how he's coped with certain situations that you need to have a certain, I suppose, confidence. Strength is the word. You need to have strength in yourself to be able to open yourself up to the world, really.
To be willing to do it,
To be willing to do it. So it's a fantastic book. It was a fitting winner of the Irish Sports Book of the Year. So that is one for the Christmas list this year for any sports fan. But even outside of sports, it's just one that transcends sport, you know, so... Mm. Cracking read.
Yeah, well, the only review I can give it, I've only had a chance to read the prologue so far in an airport bookshop. But
you're one of those, you know. Yeah.
You can sense already.
But my review, having just read the prologue, I could have stood there and read the whole book.
That's the thing. That's the sign.
In one sitting, so I knew, and I expect I'd get it for Christmas, because generally that's all I get for Christmas, is sports books, which are good presents. I'm not too upset when I get those. Then anyway, let's move on. And the next book we're going to talk about, Joe, it's another one you enjoyed. I actually hadn't heard about this book, so you might give us maybe a brief summation of what it's about and what you liked about it. So it's The Club, How the Premier League Became the Richest, Most Disruptive Business in Sport. It's written by Joshua Robinson and Jonathan Clegg and published by John Murray Publishers. So, Joe, take it away.
Basically, I'd heard about this book. It was published last year, but it's been republished and they updated it for what's happened in the last 12 months. I kind of heard about it, and these two guys got access to David Dean, who was in charge of Arsenal for many, many years, Martin Edwards, who was the kingpin of Manchester United before Sir Alex Ferguson came along, and people like Ken Bates at Chelsea, Daniel Levy at Tottenham Hotspur. So back in the day when the English Football League was falling apart, basically, ridden with hooliganism, and there was basically 5-6 major clubs, this is the story about how they all got together and all agreed to work together, eventually work together, and how Sky came on board, how Rupert Murdoch got involved. Now, that alone wouldn't be a selling point for me, because most of us know a bit about that story. But oh my God, what I didn't know. The things I did not know about what had happened at Manchester City before the Sheikh Mansour took over, and Gary Cook, and what they had to do, and what happened in the they were 150 million in debt and in big trouble, and all of a sudden he just came along and wiped it out. And they were told they had to buy a player within 12 hours of the transfer deal, and they got the Brazilian striker, who's
Rubinho.
They didn't even want him. They just went and got him because they were told they had to make a major signing. So they did it within 12 hours. There's a story of how Chelsea, the night before they played Liverpool and beat them at Anfield to get into the Champions League, they were crippled with debt. I didn't realise how much debt. And so to the point where Bruce Buck, who was the guy pulling the strings, pardon the pun, the money strings, brought in a general, a Vietnam War veteran, to talk to them about survival, and spoke to the players. It clearly worked, as they beat Liverpool the following day. Story about how Manchester United and Tottenham went together as one group and called themselves Mantot in South Africa back in the early 90s, whatever, and just did a tour there to raise awareness. And it was only then that the people, the power brokers, started to understand how much money was there to be made. It's, if you're a soccer fan, if you like the Premier League, but you don't necessarily like match reports, but you're a fan of the product, this is for you, because there's so much more to it. And the two guys involved wrote for the Wall Street Journal, they came through there, I could be wrong there now, they got unprecedented access. They got access to all previous meetings, they heard from Lord Sugar and all these people. The guys that made money and made millions and how they made it is fascinating, and where it's going is even more fascinating. So it's kind of came under the radar, enjoyed it way more than I thought it would. The Club, really, really good read if you're a soccer fan.
Okay, that sounds good. That's The Club by, who did we say, Joshua Robinson and Jonathan Clegg. Now, I think we'll rattle through the next few, because we're going to hear from the Doubles author, Adrian Russell, in a few minutes. But just a few we have jotted down here. Chaos is a Friend of Mine, The Life and Crimes of Conor McGregor by Ewan McKenna, published by, I can't even say that publisher's name, so I'm not going to try,
De Coubertin.
We'll say something like that. But I guess this one is probably a book for everyone. Everyone's going to enjoy this.
This is Ewan McKenna. And Ewan, you either love Ewan or you don't like him in terms of a writer, but he's controversial on social media. He doesn't hold back on the Dubs, GAA scene. He doesn't hold back on anything.
Or Man City, or anyone, or Conor McGregor.
Before he wrote.
Well, why this is good? If you read John Kavanagh's book, his coach, brilliant book. I read other books about Conor McGregor. They're okay. This is centered around the Khabib Nurmagomedov fight in Vegas, but it talks about what's going on outside the octagon and McGregor's life outside of it and what's going on there. I'm only I'm only just started, I'm a bit into it, but I read a lot of reviews and I've read a lot of extracts. Mm-hmm. It's McKenna at his best. Yeah. And if McKenna is writing about a subject that he's deeply interested and invested in, it's going to be a good read. If you like mixed martial arts, which I do, if you like UFC, this is a good, this is definitely, even one, two chapters in, a good purchase.
And I think if you love or hate McGregor, and know more, or certain to not be in his fan club, I think you'd want to read this, because he's a global, international superstar. He probably is the most famous Irish sports person at the moment. I can't think of anyone more famous than him. So if this kind of, like, it's the title there, The Life and Crimes of Conor McGregor, like, we know he is no angel, you know, in and out of the ring. So it's going to be very interesting to see what Ewan puts there. And it's definitely one I'm looking forward to read.
I'm looking forward to reading it as well, because during his rise and pre that Nurmagomedov bout, like, I remember saying to people who kind of dismiss it, I was comparing him to a modern day Mike Tyson, not in terms of his actual fighting ability, but in terms of his global superstardom. He was getting in trouble with the police, he was getting arrested, there was videos of him fighting on the street. And he had this baddest man on the planet gimmick going on. And he was, based on the extracts I read of Ewan's book as well, he was living up to that, committing crimes all around Dublin and Las Vegas. So
allegedly.
Allegedly. So whether, as Kieran says, you like him or hate him, he's one of the great modern, I don't know,
Personas.
Exactly. That you couldn't say it better.
And it's actually a good time for you, and with Conor McGregor making his comeback
early next year. Yeah, with Chiron, I don't think he knew that at the time, but it's great timing for him.
Brilliant timing. And this is a book that won't just sell in Ireland. This should go internationally too, because, like I said, Conor McGregor has that, like, persona, that kind of.
Just to stick a pin in it, like McKenna said, he lives in Brazil now, Ewan McKenna, and he said, if you're in Brazil and you say, "I'm Irish," the first thing they say back to you, Conor McGregor.
I played rugby for a season out in Malta when I lived there. And
there's
before,
a book there.
Before all the games, all the Maltese guys on the team would walk around doing the McGregor strut. Like, this is the kind of transcendence he has. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's The Life and Crimes of Conor McGregor by Ewan McKenna. So we look forward to that one. A few more then. I mentioned at the top of the show that my favourite sports book of all time was probably Dark Trade by Donald McRae, and he's got a new one out this year, in Sunshine or in Shadow, and it's published by Simon & Schuster Limited. I don't know if either of you know much about this book, but it's basically the story of a man called Jerry Story, who was a boxing coach at the Holy Family Club in Belfast throughout the Troubles. And this man is just an absolute icon of Irish boxing for the work he done both in the gyms and outside the gyms, keeping young men off the streets who would have otherwise got caught up in the Troubles. And you could not pick a better man than Donald McRae to tell a story like that. So he goes in depth in Jerry Story's life and the work he done in bringing communities together. There was tales he tells in the book of, on nights there was fights in his area of Belfast, both sides, the Unionists and the Republicans, or Nationalists, or whatever you like to be known as, would come together and say, "Okay, no violence tonight because there's a boxing show." And Jerry Story had that pull. So this is a story that deserves to be told. And as I said, Donald McRae telling it, you could not ask for a better author for a story like that. So that's one to look out for. Any more you want to mention before we hear from Adrian?
Just one that I wanted to mention before we talk about The Double is a book that I came across. It's been out for a couple of years. It's Tony Ten. And it's a true story, and a frightening true story, about a man in Gore in County Wexford, ordinary Joe Soap like the rest of us, never gambled in his life, got stuck in it one day, and it just spiraled frighteningly out of control. I'd like to say there's a happy ending. There isn't, that he came out, he went to prison, he came out of it, but he lost so much along the way. It's a sports book by Declan Lynch, but it's much more than that. And I'd actually recommend it for any parent or anyone like that that knows of anyone that has any kind of gambling addiction, because it's a worthwhile read. And I was fascinated by it. A year I wanted to get around to it, but it's well worth it. You'd probably pick it up for €10 or €12 now in the shops at the moment. Tony Ten. If they ever make a movie of it, you wouldn't believe it.
I read it on my holidays in August of this year. I read it in 2 days. It reads like a thriller. It's one of the greatest pieces of greatest pieces of sports writing, I don't know, writing I've ever read. Declan Lynch is a genius. He's one of the best in the game, and he tells this story brilliantly. But so I'd second that. Tony Ten.
I'm going to keep it local, and I'm going to the bowling book this year, board coming here and celebrating 50 years International Bowl Playing Association 1969 to 2019. Those watching on YouTube and online can see me holding it up now. Why I'm keeping it so parochial and so local, this is just a great, because bowling, road bowling here in West Cork is huge, you know, and it's a great book. It goes through the international bowling scene for the last 50 years, and it's just a historical collection and data of from pictures to everyone who took part and stuff. And it was a really important book for the road bowling community. And I just think for anyone involved in road bowling or associated, it's a great Christmas present. I think it's only 15 euro, you know, so it really is. And it's a collector's item too. So I really like that. You did a great job on it.
Yeah, an absolute cracker. Well, we're going to chat then about The Double. This is a book by Adrian Russell of the42.ie, and we're going to hear from him in a minute. He spoke to Kieran a little earlier on, but before we do, I'd like to get maybe Ger and Kieran's thoughts on the book. Ger, have you had a chance to read any of this?
I've only read extracts of it so far, but I'll tell you what I love about it already is when the interviews he conducted, or Adrian, he got huge positive feedback, much like you with your rowing book about Skibbereen. He got access to nearly all of both the Cork football and hurling camps. I remember the time very well, and he didn't have to be a GAA fan to appreciate it. But to win a double is a very unique thing. And I agree with Malachy Clark, and I think he wrote during the week, don't think it's been appreciated at all. No. Because it was just kind of, the Cork footballers, it was the second in a row, two in a row. But for the hurlers, they came out of absolutely nowhere. But what I love about the extracts that I've read already, and I've read a lot of Adrian's work on the 42.ie down through the years, he's very, very good at pushing a story along very quickly because he lets the person he's interviewing do all the talking. And I can hear Niall Callan, I can hear Tomás Mulcahy, and I can hear Gerald McCarthy, and I can hear Billy Morgan in my head as I'm reading the quotes. And I think it is one for Cork GAA fans, definitely, and it's a big county, but I think there's enough in it for outside of Cork, possibly over the border as well, that would really appreciate, especially in Meath as well, because there's a lot of feedback from the other counties. It's already, even from what little I've read of it, and I will get to it and I will read it, and I've recommended it because so many people have come across that have finished it already, have said to me, he hits it nail on the head. He actually gets it right, the balance. You could very easily lose the footballers or the hurlers onto it. Adrian being Adrian, such a good writer, I can see that it's going to be a success for him.
And it's even there, just on the back of the book, kind of Michael Minehan of The Examiner says, the greatest achievement in GAA history finally gets its due. The Double is a singular triumph. Dave Hannigan said, one of the greatest Irish sporting stories finally gets the brilliant book it deserves. And it is a brilliant book. I remember Adrian, like you said there, his style of writing. Go back to 2000, I think it was 2006 World Cup. He was writing a diary in The Examiner. I'm sure it was 2006. And he was over there trying to get as many games as he could, living off maybe 50 quid a day or 100 quid a day or something. He was trying to do it on a shoestring. And at that time, it was like you'd buy The Examiner just to read Adrian's kind of daily update, his daily diary. And he's never lost that talent. He's a very, very talented writer. And it's a brilliant book. So for the GFN in your life, but even for the sports person in your life, it's just a brilliant read. And it has to be in a lot of Christmas stockings, I think, this Christmas. He's done a superb job on it.
And shout out to Mercier Press for the cover of The Double and the cover of Something in the Water.
The inside of it actually was absolutely brilliant. Just inside the match programme. I really love that. It was a nice touch, yeah.
And a really nice touch. And not to take away, the cover of Something in the Water was an absolutely cracking effort as well. So
that's Mercier. I think they're the two best. I know I'm probably biased here, but they're the two best book covers of the year.
Well, it beats the old face on the cover, doesn't it? I'm sick of seeing that. But obviously, that's to draw people to the book. We understand the marketing of it all. But let's leave our chat about The Double there then, and we'll hear from author Adrian Russell.
Congrats on the book, Adrian. Superb read. The timing is brilliant. It's almost 30 years since Cork won The Double back in 1990. And this book is important for so many reasons, because it was such a terrific achievement what Cork achieved back then. But was it a surprise to you that this book hadn't been written before?
Yeah, I suppose that's where the opportunity came from. The gap was there for the likes of me to nip in there. Which is great for me, but I suppose that it does kind of speak to the fact that the achievement was maybe it doesn't get the respect perhaps that it should, or hadn't had the impact over the years that I think it should have. Obviously it's a unique achievement, and there was a lot of hops of the ball had to go right, and there was a lot of big characters had to kind of make it happen. It was surprising to me. And when you look at it from maybe a cynical point of view, and when you're trying to put a book together that all the ingredients were there for a really good story, big characters, the narrative was there. They had to, that made it to, they overcome Grace Kerry team, and then they had to overcome footballers talking about, they had to overcome need, and the hurlers were very much, down the dumps in the late 80s and early 90s. So, it was surprising, I suppose, wasn't it? There's better guys than me probably that could have done it, the likes of the Michael Foley's and the McMinans or whatever the word. But I was happy to kind of take it on, and it kind of became apparent that the players were happy enough to chat about it once I got their numbers.
And then, I suppose, obviously, as a Corkman yourself and a huge Cork fan, did that make it easier or harder to write this book? Kind of easier in the fact that you kind of knew the backstory and how much this meant to the people of Cork, or harder in the sense that the fact that you knew these people, that there was more pressure on you because you were telling the story for the first time? So do you think being a Corkman helped or hindered you in this process, Adrian?
Yeah, I think both, to be honest. Initially, it made it easier. I mean, you have a great book out this year, may I say, this year as well. I mean, I'd imagine that was done, in your own time, really. We both have, and lots of these people like us have full-time jobs. You're kind of doing it as a labour of love and a passion, really. So when you get deep into a project like that, you want to be interested in it. And I definitely was. But I don't think I realised, really, I don't know if pressure is the right word, but the fact that I am, in living in Cork, I'm from Cork, all my friends and family care about this as well. So everywhere I go, people are, offering opinions on what I produce. After the fact, there's a lot of pressure, and maybe it would have been wiser to take on, a first book, if you want to call it a first book, on a subject that wasn't so kind of, I suppose, intimate or whatever to my life. But, to be honest, I don't think it would have got done unless I really cared about the subject, and, I was happy to spend I live in Cork, as I said, but I work in Dublin, so there's a lot of hours on the train, so I was happy to kind of go back to old newspapers for, a couple of hours and look up when you're in Limerick Junction or whatever, so it kind of getting deep into a subject like that, you kind of need to, care passionately about it, that's how it came about.
You kind of mentioned there, Adrian, kind of writing a book, it kind of has to be a labour of love, and that actually comes true in the double, you can see it in every page, in every chapter and stuff, kind of, you can see that this meant an awful lot to you, and even before we'd have a close look at the book, kind of, like you know better than most, writing a book is a journey of ups and downs. What were some of the highlights for you over the process of putting this together?
Excuse me. I don't know, it was such a, I was eight, let's say. I was eight the year of the double, these were kind of childhood, without overstating it, these were kind of, childhood heroes of mine. So it was a real privilege to, there's a lot of cups of coffee, and, good conversations with people who I would have always looked up to. And, you kind of realise that was a privilege, and it was a nice way to spend a few hours, and they didn't have to do it. So I don't know, what comes to mind, I suppose, is kind of, the likes of Larry Tompkins asking me or telling me to come in, early one morning before he opens the pub and making a pot of coffee. And, I probably asked two or three questions over the course of an hour and a half, and he just kind of lays out his memories, as much as I was able to get out of him. So, that kind of stuff. I suppose, just on the flip side, the fact that you're kind of chasing people and you can't necessarily pin them down for a chat, so their perspective isn't as prominent as you would like it to be. But, that's always going to happen. I think there's, I don't know what it is, but maybe up to 40 interviews kind of make up the skeleton of the book. There's a lot in it, but that would be really just the fact that these people, I suppose, trusted me, if that's the right word, to kind of put their story forward and put it all together. And the reaction has been good, and very good. You'd be nervous enough after the fact of, is this a fair representation of what happened and whatever, but without speaking for the players, and I'm sure there's different views, but generally speaking, I think they're all pretty happy with the kind of spotlight that this has put on their amazing achievement.
Oh, brilliant. Like you said earlier too, Adrian, I suppose, maybe this achievement hasn't got the due recognition that it has deserved over the years. So just set the scene for us a small bit, heading into 1990, right? With the footballers, it probably wasn't as much of a surprise that they went on to win the All-Ireland, obviously having won in 89, but the hurlers were in a far different kind of situation heading into 1990.
Yeah, they were, exactly. Yeah. So they were going back too far. They won the All-Ireland in 86, and that was the end of that kind of Jimmy Barry Murphy team. And, you know, so that kind of broke up a bit. And they, you know, then Tipperary famously ended a famine in 87, as Richie Sakeham said. And Babs and Tipper were on top then for a couple of years. And in 89 then, Cork kind of really hit an idea, as was characterised, I suppose, in 89 by a defeat to Waterford in a Munster semi-final replay, I think. So, like, yeah, I was kind of back to square one at that stage. So they went in and basically recruited Father O'Brien, or the Cannon, as he became known after the fact, but Father O'Brien then, who was a very charismatic, I suppose, hurling fanatic, you know, from the West Cork area, from in the Shannon there. He had a lot of success with Ferran Ferris, with Harty Cups, and then in UCC with 10 in a row, Fitzgibbons or whatever it was. He was part of the 84 team, with our management backroom team, with Justin McCarthy. And then so he came in and he kind of pulled a lot of strands together, and he brought back people like Tomás Mackay and Geoff Fitzgerald came in and see big characters who'd been kind of ostracised in 89. He brought in young lads like Mark Foley, you know, from down West Corkway as well, obviously. You know, John Fitzgibbon, a charismatic forward from the Glen, you know, all these kind of under 21 stars who kind of stepped up. And basically, he just, I suppose, as much as anything tactical, he kind of just convinced them that they had the wherewithal to kind of go and take on anybody. Like, and then, you know, famously, the Donkeys and Derbies episode happened in, you know, before the 1990 Munster Hurling final with Babs Keating. Mm-hmm. Not even making a slip of the tongue, but it was used against him anyway. And, you know, Cork won a classic there in Turles, and then they're up and running in those days. You're into a semi-final, obviously, and they were on the road, yeah. So it was a real underdog one, and a kind of a flash in the pan. And when you look at it in context, if that didn't happen, Cork would have been down for a long time, really. You know, there was a couple of teams in transition there, and they didn't win another one until 1999. So yeah, all the ingredients were there for a really good story. Because I was kind of worried, to be honest, looking on a bit, like, you know, the footballers, as you say, that, like, there's almost a book in them on their own, I think, like, to be honest. They're brilliant characters, and they were on the road together, almost like a club team for 4 or 5 years, like, but the hurlers were kind of, you know, I won't say one season wonders, because they weren't, but they definitely kind of came out of nowhere initially, and the Cannon was gone again by kind of, I suppose, after 93.
And there's so many strong, I was going to say, there's so many strong figures and characters throughout this book. And like you mentioned there, the Cannon, I suppose the Cannon and Billy Morgan, like, they were the two central figures in both camps, kind of. What did you learn about them to writing the book?
To be honest, I hate to think that, like, for me, he was a big, I went to Farm First myself, mm-hmm. and I once say I knew the man, because I absolutely didn't, but you know, he was a big character around the place, and even in Cork hurling, you know, there was a touch of the kind of cartoon about it, you know, a caricature is a better word, you know, people, and I was hoping to kind of learn a lot more about him as a person, really. And I, like, the main thing I would say is that he was very, like, he was, like, his bark was worse than his bite, as Mark Foley, I think, said in the book, and that was definitely true. Like, he was a very human man, like, there was a very, I think, as far as I can tell, you know, a very cutting side to him as well. Like, he wasn't all about the stick, like, so there, you know, that kind of persona on the pitch with the kind of staccato barking out of orders, you know, that was very much him as a trainer. But as well as that, he kind of did look after, and he was, you know, cognizant that these are young people or whatever as well. Excuse me. But he just loved hurling. Like, I mean, I don't know how he fit it all into his day. Like, he ran a busy parish below Gargland at the time. You know, he was constantly kind of ducking out of training to go and do a funeral or kind of make some kind of a house call or whatever. And he was, you know, covered a lot of ground. But he was kind of the old style when he come to the trainer side of him. He was the old style as well. He didn't necessarily believe in tactics. You know, it was all about psychology, really, and kind of playing fair was very important to him. You know, the skills of hurling, kind of old style. I think he kind of traded on the fact that he knew Chris Deering a bit, and he kind of brought into that mentality a lot of the old style, you know, winning in All-Ireland is a Cork hurler's birthright, almost. Like, so he's very charismatic. And, like, when you know, he sadly passed away there in recent years, and, you know, it was testament to the, you know, generations and generations of hurlers that differently, you know, not just into county stars and all, but, you know, kind of people who passed through his hands, really, in UCC as well as the school. And it's not in the book, but I spoke to Nicky English a bit, I think, off the record. You know, and it's in his book. I'm not saying he told me this, but it's in his book. You know, how important the cannon was to him, mm-hmm. like even as a Tipperary player. Like he kind of changed his philosophy on hurling, and he knew himself. You know, in 1990, that Tipper were in trouble when the cannon kind of started to use Bob's words against them, and he claims he said as he left the pitch, the Silver Fox has done it again. Like, so he knew what a clever adversary he was, I suppose, but there was a real human side to him as well.
And you kind of mentioned there Mark Foley, I suppose, with the hurlers, and I suppose here in West Cork we love to believe, and we do believe, that it is the home of football in Cork, like football heartland. And I suppose with the Cork footballers in, the likes of Niall Cahillane, John Cleary, Larry Tompkins, Tony Davies, even the late Mick McCarthy, they all feature in this too. So kind of it, like, West Cork did play a huge part in Cork and Cork footballers back in 1990, Adrian.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was like they were really the engine of the team, the footballers. I think I suppose Larry Tompkins, like the likes of Niall Cahillane, he was on the road and he tasted the defeat with, you know, against Kerry and those that kind of generation of 1980s Cork footballers used that as fuel really later on. And then the missing link was maybe Larry Tompkins, and as well as Shea Fahey as well, who ended up in the city, obviously. But yeah, and they had ferocious crack as well. I mean, they were a tight-knit bunch, I suppose, like coming from Bridge Street and Skibbereen there every evening. And I suppose they'd want to be kind of doing that spin every second night or whatever. Like, and yeah, as you mentioned, I suppose John Cleary and Mick McCarthy were kind of gunning for the same spot on the team.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very talented footballers in their own right. But they never, the point was made loads of times, really, that they never let that kind of rivalry, if it was a rivalry, get in the way of a really solid friendship. Like, and they were, you know, in the middle of a lot of car games and messing and crack, I think, that the two lads, like, so, and then Niall Cahillane, you know, as you say, like, especially when it kind of came to time when, like, they first had to beat Kerry, like, as you know, and then they were kind of faced this new monster, as it was characterised, in Meath, like, and the likes of Niall Cahillane were so important in kind of standing up to, you know, that big beast that was the Meath teams, like, and, you know, inside the dressing room, kind of articulating what needed to be done, and then going out and actually showing it. He was massively important. So yeah, Billy Morgan, especially, you know, was quick to mention that kind of group of West Cork people and Cork players who were so important throughout that era.
Like, this is an incredible book, Adrian, packed with incredible characters, and like, I think it's a book too that goes much beyond Cork GA. Like, I think it's a book the whole country will be interested in, because it kind of it lifts the lid and goes behind the scenes on one of the most magical and memorable years ever in the GA. Because, like we were kind of saying earlier, it's highly unlikely this is ever going to happen again. So congratulations, Adrian, superb book, and the very, very best of luck with it. And thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to the Star Sport podcast, the only podcast dedicated to all things sport in West Cork. Don't forget to pick up this Thursday's Southern Star newspaper, including our award-winning sports section with everything a West Cork sports fan could want, in shops across West Cork and online from anywhere in the world via www.southernstar.ie/epaper. The Southern Star and the Star Sport Podcast, #1 for sport in West Cork.
Okay, welcome back to the Star Sport Podcast. And before we get the lads' picks for their sports book of the year, if you're watching on YouTube, you'll see we've got a selection of books here on the desk. If you're listening, there, you can take my word for it. There is a selection of books on the desk. And in the spirit of Christmas, we're going to give some of them away. So we've got a copy of Kieran's There's Something in the Water. We've got a copy of Behind the Lines, which is a compilation of some of the best Irish sports writing of the year, courtesy of the42.ie. We've got a book from Sportsfile, the photography agency, Great Moments in Irish Football. This is a real collector's edition, this book.
Beautiful.
This is one you'd have on your bookshelf for 20 years and just dip in and out, look at some of the photos, relive some of the best memories in Irish football. We've also got a copy of Sean McGoldrick's The Dublin Marathon, which celebrates 40 years of the Dublin Marathon. Mm-hmm. It was also nominated for a sports book of the year.
It was a shortlisted for that.
So there's another great one. And we also have another copy of the book Kieran mentioned earlier, Bowl Cumann na hÉireann, 50 years of International Bowl Playing Association. So to win these books, we're going to make it very simple. I've listed them out there. Just email sport@southernstar.ie. Tell us the book you want, your name and your address, and the first five people, I guess, to email in will get a copy of the book they selected. So that's sport@southernstar.ie. I hope that's not too complicated. Free books for everyone, so just get in touch. Now, we're going to wrap up, but as I mentioned, quickly, lads, pick for sports book of the year. Jor, we'll start with you.
I would say Something in the Water, because it surprised me. Not being smart, it surprised me, but just how quickly I read it. Like, you, it's a good book when you fly through it, and you fly through this very quickly. And I know nothing about rowing. I know a little bit of it. And I would give a special mention as well to the club, I think, for a lot of soccer fans out there. And in terms of GA, the double. I think Adrian's book, The Double, is worth looking at, but definitely Something in the Water, yeah.
For Joe, I was going to pick the Tottenham Hotspur album, kind of the 2019 annual, yeah. But no, I'm actually going to plump my own book, and I know that's very egotistical of me, but
you're entitled.
I really do think
if you don't love yourself, who will love it?
It's just, I think, kind of when you're looking at sports books, like, and it's interesting that we picked kind of boxing and cycling books earlier. People think of the GA, the soccer, the rugby and stuff, and I think it's worth when you give a chance to a book that's not from one of the so-called bigger sports, you know, just kind of, that's why I'm saying to all the listeners out there, when they are deciding their sports book this year, kind of, it doesn't have to be Something in the Water, but I would recommend it, but just consider other sports books. When you're looking around the bookstore, kind of, just don't lunge for what seems like the obvious one. Kind of think about the kind of the story behind the book, and you want the person reading the book to enjoy the book. You want it to take you on a little adventure, take you somewhere where you haven't been before. I think for people in West Cork and beyond, Something in the Water does that, because what Jorg kind of alluded to earlier too, this is a small little pocket in Skibbereen in West Cork that has changed Irish rowing, but also made a huge mark on the international rowing world. Like Gary and Paul O'Donovan, you know, when you're just known by your first name, Gary and Paul, and they are. You go anywhere in the country, Gary and Paul, you think of Skibbereen. You go anywhere in the country, if you say you're from Skibbereen, the first thing they say, well, that's where the rowers are from. So this just gives you the kind of backstory into that, kind of what it takes to be a rower and how the club has developed and evolved over the years to produce so many world champions, Olympic silver medalists. So I think, yeah, I'm going to be an egotistical maniac here and plump my own book, but I don't think you'll be disappointed.
No, I don't think so either, and I might as well complete the hat-trick. I'll say some nice things about the book as well. But Something in the Water, like people will probably know, I'm not originally from West Cork, but I've been living here a while now. But even reading the book, so that's saying, I'm not from West Cork, I don't know anything about rowing, but within like the first 10-15 pages, I was like laughing along with the lads having the crack at home with their father. And Joe, I was just engrossed by it, and so yeah, I won't say much more. Kieran said enough. I really enjoyed it, and I think whether you're a sports fan or not, you'll also like it. I'll also once again give a shout out to the new Donald McRae book, In Sunshine or in Shadow, for anyone interested in Irish history, the troubles, boxing in Northern Ireland. This is really it's a special piece of work. So
we're not finished just yet, Jack.
Okay.
Spoiler. Jor's written a book, and I've written a book, but you haven't written a book yet. But what you have written for this week's Southern Star is, if you're watching it on YouTube, it's Jack's child, his favourite Christmas toy story.
Famous Christmas toy. We were asked to write about our famous
And this is a fantastic read. It's a short story, but it's a brilliant... I started reading this from the first paragraph down to the end. It probably took me less than 5 minutes. But it's a brilliant, brilliant read. So I don't want to give away the spoiler too much. Well, I will in a second about what Jack's favourite Christmas tie is. But here in the office, we said we'd present him with something just to...
look at this. Christmas. Oh, man, that's class. We'll actually, to infinity and beyond.
So basically, if anyone's watching on YouTube, this is Jack McCarron's face.
Look at that.
And Buzz Lightyear. So, Jack...
This is ready to look for a doll.
That's a real treat.
It's been a very productive day in the Southern Star office.
You made my face fatter, like.
We had to give you a double chin.
It's just a suit.
Yeah, what, Dad?
It's just a suit.
Yeah, but like, that's my actual face.
I think we had to give you a double chin. Camera has 10 pounds.
I think there's some Photoshop tricks going on there.
So I do hope this will inspire you to keep up the short writing, Jack, because he's quite talented. Kind of, so that's for this Thursday Southern Star. in the Skibbereen Christmas magazine, Jack McCarran takes us back to the Christmas of 96. And I would recommend this to all our listeners. So that's this Thursday's Southern Star. So great work, Jack.
Yeah, thanks very much, Kieran. That means a lot coming from the man who's just plugged his own book for the last 45 minutes. So you can wrap us up there if you want.
So again, thanks for listening to the Star Sport podcast. And thanks, big thanks to Joe McCarthy for joining us in the studio today. We'll be back at the same time next week. So if you enjoy these shows, please make sure to rate, review and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, Acast, Stitcher, wherever else you listen to the show. And the last word is buy a book. I don't think you can put a price on books, whether it's a sports book or a fiction or whatever. Kind of books are fantastic for just for people, just for entertainment alone. Put down the phone, turn off the TV and read a book.
Yep, so, absolutely.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Star Sport Podcast, number one for sport in West Cork.